Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
You're listening to The Front Three. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Adam Boltwood. Joining me, as always, is the one and only Lawrence McKenna.
Hey, how you doing?
And I've also got the stat man himself, Dave O'Brien.
Hello.
We have just finished an epic 3-hour live stream on the Football Republic. It went a bit overtime because of the Bayern Munich Juventus game. Very exciting stuff, guys. I'm glad they went over. It was enjoyable.
Probably one of the best knockout games in a while, wasn't it, Dave?
Yeah, well, it swung. Pendulum. I think Allegri got his tactics spot on at the start. The system that he played was perfect. It's interesting to see that it was a copy of Thomas Tuchel's system that played Bayern a few weeks ago, but it felt like the momentum sort of left Juventus when Mandzukic came on. Massive criticism of Mandzukic in the game. Morata was brilliant in the first half. Pogba was really good, sort of linking with him. But then I think after the first Bayern goal, you could see the massive swing. The simple goal, got the ball wide, cross it into the box. But then sort of like not the stuffing out of Juventus in a way, and they just couldn't respond. And it looked like Bayern, from that point, it looked like Bayern were going to win the game.
2-0 at half time, wasn't it, to Juventus? Ended up camped out on their own penalty area towards the end of the game.
But then they have been camped out in their own penalty area for a little while because that was their tactic. But the problem was that before they had an out, Mandzukic just basically almost, I mean, he just didn't give them that out, did he?
What did you make of Kingsley Coman? He scored the final goal.
It's audacious. And then he was also involved in the first goal, the pass back to Douglas Costa, who put
course,
the cross in.
And on loan from Juve.
Yeah.
Controversial hero.
Well, I mean, he's on loan with a view to
Bayern, yeah. It's probably an FFP thing that they're getting around in a way where you loan a player and then you'll sign them next summer.
Yeah.
But you probably would have paid half the fee and it's in a contract that you're going to pay the rest of it. So I think it's around €30 million. But obviously a very talented player. It was very good against at the weekend for Bayern. He's got 2 assists in that game. So he looks like he's getting a bit of form.
He's a baller. Piotr Gala on Twitter, at Peter Polish, said, "How do you feel about the ref wrongly disallowing the Juve goal and gifting Bayern a berth in the quarterfinals?"
Well, it's big. I wanted Juventus to go through, obviously.
Dave's very upset.
Yeah, I like Juventus this year. They're a very good to watch. You should go and check them out in Serie A now. They're out the Coppa Italia, but they're a very attacking team. They dribble the ball a lot. They create lots of chances. And they've got two of the best youngsters in world football, Paul Pogba and Dybala. But I feel like, the goal, whether it was or wasn't supposed to be disallowed, really did swung the game in a way. If they'd scored that was, in a way, tie over, you'd say.
Here's an interesting question from Michael Filetti. He said, "How close/far are Juve to the elite three in Europe?" The elite three being Barcelona, Bayern Munich and Real. Now, it's interesting because it looks like Allegri is going to be staying this summer, but the futures of a number of players are going to be up in the air now. I mean, namely Paul Pogba, even Paolo Dybala, maybe.
Yeah, but I still think, I mean, Dybala's probably less of an option, but I think Paul Pogba has been an option that a lot of people have been considering for a while, and Juve would definitely consider taking offers for him. But the point is that Juve don't have to accept them. They're not in any great financial difficulty. Mm. They want to build themselves as an institution, and Paul Pogba's essentially also been built by Juve because they took a chance on him.
Not really a chance, I wouldn't say, but a definite talent and ability. But they went in for him, and they went in for him hard, and they got the they obviously picked him up on a free transfer. But what's quite interesting regarding that is, if they get a big enough offer, why not sell him? If they're going to get 80 million for him, and then they can put that money back into the club. Because what we've seen is they've signed young players very well. Storaro, that came off the bench today, is only 23 years old, and he's one of the best central midfielders coming up in Italy.
They've got another right winger.
Domenico Berardi, who is the, you know, in terms of attacking players up there, top three players under 23 in Europe, you'd say. He's got such talent. They've got Regani at the back. That's another young Italian defender that last season played every single minute of Empoli's campaign, and they had a very good defensive record. So again, Juve have kept this model going where they sign players like Pogba, like Kingsley Coman, like Dybala, like Morata, young talented players, and then they sort of, you know, bring them through this Juve sort of system with the old heads of Bonucci, Chiellini, Buffon, Evra. The blend of youth and experience is perfect for Juve. But again, they probably need to go through another little spell of transition. You know, with Dybala coming in, he's young, but he's been very good. Injured tonight, which was a massive miss. It's just going to be... I'm looking forward to watching this Juve team in the coming years, because they're just going to get better and better, with Pogba or without Pogba.
Big result, of course, for Pep Guardiola. You know, we've talked before on the podcast about how his tenure at Bayern Munich might be seen as a failure if he does fail to win the Champions League this season. It looked like he was crashing out of the competition, but he pulled it back, made the right substitutions, Dave. Obviously got his players fired up and motivated.
Yeah, I think it's the reaction that Pep's got to be... He's got to be credited for. You know, at half-time, they looked gone. They looked absolutely gone. So the reaction he got after half-time, you know, the attacking sort of potential that he increased slowly, you know, bringing on Kingsley Coman for Xabi Alonso.
Yeah.
That's ballsy, and that's good.
Questioned on Twitter at the time.
I don't know if it is ballsy, though, because actually I think that Alonso struggles sometimes with very aggressive midfield attackers, and he finds it difficult to shepherd them. I think essentially they were taking away that threat, and I think they were right to do it.
I think the really interesting part, though, is the contrast of what Wenger did on 44 minutes, defensive midfielder for defensive midfielder when he needed goals. What Pep does, brings on another attacker, and they end up playing like five up front, two in midfield and three at the back. So, you know, again, credit to Guardiola. And then bringing Thiago on as well, you know, back in the game, get that control back. And obviously Thiago came up trumps, scoring the crucial third goal.
So Bayern Munich are through. The other team who are through from tonight, obviously Barcelona, beating Arsenal 3-1 at the Camp. Now, Arsenal actually played well. They played well. Arsenal actually played well. They made some chances, maybe not clear-cut chances, but the difference was obviously Barcelona next level. When they made their chances, especially Suarez, they took them.
I think it's that sort of the clinicalness of that front three is unbelievable. You know, it's out of this world in a way. How well they can take these chances again.
It gives them great options.
Yeah, it really does. You know, every single one of those finishes, you'd say if you put an Arsenal player in those positions, they probably would have missed all those chances. Again, Danny Welbeck had a few chances, a cracking tackle by Mascherano on Welbeck. Iwobi got into the box, was potentially tripped, you know, a question on that, whether it was a penalty. But it shows the difference in quality and difference in class. This Barcelona team is miles and miles ahead of this Arsenal team. When this Arsenal team should be, you know, with the money they've spent, the players that they brought in should be a lot closer than they actually are.
A lot of frustration, Lawrence, as always, among Arsenal fans. I mean, since we last spoke on the podcast, they got knocked out of the FA Cup, of course. But it does seem to be this sort of weary frustration that, I mean, again tonight, knocked out in the round of 16.
Yeah, but not a different kind of knockout. I mean, you can't expect to go through against Barcelona. You know, there's very few sides that
really
a shame.
They didn't really compete, though.
That's part of it, is the difference is the reasons why they didn't compete and maybe some of the tactical shortcomings, basically, for Arsenal.
It's not like they could have given in before the tie, right? Starting lineup and whatever wasn't his first team.
Or was he looking to trial things and looking to try things out? I mean, if you... The problem is they were still in the tie, and with the initial team he fielded didn't look like what it was going to compete.
Yeah, you tell you, the competitive element there, the level of potentially some of the players that he started, it's not really, again, injuries.
El Nene and Flamini starting in the middle.
Yeah, that would be a criticism.
Is probably the biggest criticism, isn't it? Yes. Because it changes the shape of the midfield. And also,
who's the driving force?
Who's driving force?
Who's dictating?
Also, just who's the inspirational player in there? You know, there's no Cazorla in there. There's no Arteta even. You know,
I mean, Ramsey, you'd say that.
Ramsey. But you know what I'm saying? Like, at least with Arteta, I know Arteta's not at his peak of his powers anymore, and they won't use him. But at least with Arteta, like, there was some sort of drive and control to the game, and they don't seem to. Neither of those players, none of the players, controlled it.
Do you think Arsenal's season is now over, Dave? I mean, they're 11 points behind Leicester with a game in hand, admittedly, out of the Champions League, out of the FA Cup. Are we going to see Arsenal fighting for fourth once again?
I don't think we'll see them fight. I think they'll comfortably. I don't think the top four is going to change, really. I feel that they are the most consistent teams of a very inconsistent league, but it is interesting that again they failed in Europe, they failed domestically. And the champ, but the thing with the Championship, you know, the Premier League title, it's in a way it's still open. I wouldn't be surprised if Arsenal went on to win it. I wouldn't be surprised if City went on to win it. I still really? Think those top four, the top four sides, still think they've equally got a chance to win the league. Any of those go on a big run, that's the thing. I think it's they've all got tough games to come, and if. Especially Leicester City, their running is disgusting in a way. They've got to play Man United, Chelsea and Everton, I think, in the last three games. So it's still open. But Leicester City, they do look at the moment like they're pulling in championship-winning performances in a way. You know, the 1-0 wins, the gritty wins.
Mm.
And that's what it looks like at the moment. They're pulling that off.
A few comments on Twitter. Farhan saying, this game was over when the draw was made. I don't know why people gave Arsenal even a thought of winning against Barcelona. Faruha said, there was no need to park the bus for 45 minutes when you were 2-0 up. Just play your normal game. I assume he's referring to Juventus on that one. Will a healthy Bayern Munich win the Champions League? Nico says on Twitter, Dave. Obviously, Bayern Munich have had their injury problems at this stage of the season in the past few years under Guardiola. This year?
They, as I said before, the changes were really big. The changes were good. But it's like you can get at them. There's a method now that you can play this Bayern team. If you play, you know, the five at the back and then the midfield has been playing in the last few games, it's like that there's a weak underbelly that if you press them high up the pitch as well as playing a back five, it seems like a way to go against Bayern Munich. It's going to be interesting, though. You won't see Man City won't do that against them. So if they play City, they'll beat them comfortably. You'd say Benfica or, you know, all the plaudits I've been giving Benfica. I think if they play Bayern, they'd probably lose to them. I think they need to, you know, a tactically flexible side like Juventus. That's why it's quite really interesting that Juventus did lose this ties, because that's how you'd want to play against Bayern Munich, is a tactically flexible side that can play a back three, a back five, a back four. So it's going to be really interesting to see the next leg. Again, what we all want to see is Barcelona Bayern.
What's the interesting side is obviously Bayern look. You made the point tonight in the live stream, Dave. Barcelona's defence looked really uncomfortable.
But they were missing the main man in Gerard Piqué, who was going to be back, right? I think Barcelona need to become, what I mentioned on the live stream, again, going back to that great show, go and check it out, is more of that they need to defend as a unit again. Neymar needs to stop being lazy.
Ooh.
I feel that he again, a great performance from him going forward, but he has to do his work rate.
Doesn't try back.
He's lazy. You need to. I think you don't want to defend in a four with three central midfielders in front of that's not enough. You need another one of your, you know, if you're playing a 4-3-3, you need one of your forwards to trap back. It doesn't matter, you can rotate it, but it's better to have one player that is going to make that second bank of four, because if you don't, then it leaves three players to cover a whole pitch, which that's is too much. But then the good thing with Suarez is that he presses from the front, which is good, but then you also do need the duality of being able to press and sit back, and that's what they had so well last season. Rakitic out wide right, and then Neymar wide left, and they didn't have that tonight, which was a bit frustrating looking at them.
Really good point, Dave.
We also had the previous night Manchester City going through. They drew 0-0. Not too much to mention about that game.
It was called one of the worst qualifying games of all time. It really was a terrible match.
Apparently it was the first time in years that it's happened that there's been 2-0.
It was terrible.
In the Champions League on the same night.
Yeah.
But Manchester City, probably the one thing to note is the injuries they suffered. Vincent Kompany out again. Looks like Otamendi's got a knock. He's not going to be out for too long. But could affect them in the title race, Dave.
Oh, that's it. I lumped on £20 a few weeks ago stupidly on Man City because I thought that they finally clicked together with Kompany coming back, but now he's out, so I might as well put that betting slip in the bin. It's just weird, this Man City team
on your local rivals winning the league.
So in football I only bet when I like kind of think this is going to go. So like, for example, Barcelona last season, I put a bet on them in January to win the Champions League because they started structures to look really good. About £140, I think, from a £20 bet, which is decent for Barcelona. That's why, you know, you look at the odds, you look at the whole thing, you don't just look at one thing. Similar to won quite a lot of, I think I put a £2 bet on Wigan to be in the UEFA Cup the first season they came up.
Well, now he's just boasting.
But anyway, sorry, we're going away from the point.
Well, the other game, of course, was Atletico Madrid winning on penalty, a bit of a penalty masterclass at the end of the day against PSV Eindhoven.
Yeah, ended up 7-7. Juan Fran making it 8-8.
It's quite interesting. Oblak, the Atletico goalkeeper.
Yeah.
The last like three penalties, he just stood still. And maybe psychologically, that put it in the mind of the PSV player, Narsin, that stepped up, that was actually brought on to take about Everton. There's a lot made out of it. Narsin was brought on instead of Luke de Jong. It's got to score it. But it, psychologically, it's quite interesting, because if you think that the goalkeeper's gone down the middle three times in a row, so you think he's going to do that again? Or do you think he's not going to do that? I think it got into his head.
But that shows there what you got to do is make a penalty unsavable. So,
yes, correct.
And that's the issue there.
Yeah, that he didn't make it unsavable. He hit the bar. He didn't get it on target, technically. And it's an issue. It was off target at the bar. So but the game was rotten.
It makes for a great draw.
Yeah.
I mean, so with the there's teams a video in that.
Now, there is a video in that. So the teams we've got through now, we've got Bayern Munich, obviously, after tonight. It's as if you're just thinking out loud.
I'm just thinking out loud. Just trying to give everyone in the world YouTube video ideas, Adam.
So obviously we've got Bayern Munich through now. Barcelona, Atletico Madrid, Manchester City, Paris Saint-Germain, Benfica, Real Madrid and Wolfsburg. Early shouts for who's going to win it without the draw being made. Obviously, there could be some very tasty ones in there.
Dave says Benfica. Why Benfica?
I like Benfica. I just like the structure. They're very good. Press well. They've got a lot of players that are come into their primes of their career. Jonas up front. Behind Cristiano Ronaldo in the European Golden Boot race, one goal behind him. Again, which is quite interesting how, just to take you completely out of context, that we all love a tangent here. How the Golden Boot works, obviously, you get multipliers based on the league you're in. So like the Premier League, La Liga, Bundesliga, they get like a times two multiplier.
Right.
So do Portugal, which is quite interesting. And Ligue 1 gets a 1.5 multiplier. So if Zlatan was in the race, he'd be joint with Ronaldo, but because he's plays in Liga that's probably quite similar to the Portuguese league, you'd say, in terms of quality.
That's interesting.
This is, complete subplot to the actual plot of Benfica winning the league. I think the midfield's very good balance. They've got a ball player, Samaris, and a good box-to-box player. But then Nicolas Gaitan has been directly involved in more goals than any midfielder in the Champions League this season. And again, he's been linked to Man United for years and years and years and years and years. Consistency-wise, he's in and out, injuries, but this season he's started to really kick on. He looks like a threat. He was man of the match against Zenit. He scored a goal, got an assist, was a threat going forward, crossing on the left-hand side.
But is he going to fire Benfica to the Champions League?
Yes, he is.
One thing I would say, Dave, having mentioned tangents here, Man City in drawing last night cost the coefficient.
Okay. I didn't think about that, actually.
Yeah, it cost... I mean, Jonathan Wilson tweeted it cost the coefficient 0.125 points, isn't it? But even then...
How much did Arsenal cost?
That's the point, though, is that they're less because they lost against Barcelona.
Higher opposition.
Losing to Kiev is a...
The kind of good thing then for... Obviously, I wanted Juventus to win tonight was then Juventus losing, right? Because they lost to Bayern Munich. Potentially, Juventus may have been ranked ahead of them. Obviously, their performance in the Champions League... Well, they might not have... They probably not have been, actually, if you think about the last few years. No, but really obviously, they like we said before, Arsenal wouldn't have lost as many points as Juventus have lost it.
Do we not want to see Man City drawn against Bayern Munich in the next round?
We absolutely do.
Oh, no.
You want to see Pep Guardiola peeled in half. Pep versus Pep.
What do you make of PSG? Because obviously they did go through against Chelsea. Relatively comfortable, you'd say. But do you think this is a team that's got any chance of actually winning this competition? It's something that's been an aspiration of the team for a few years now. Zlatan in his last season at the club, never won the Champions League. Could be a nice sort of ending for him there.
I feel that, obviously, Zlatan this season, been directly involved in 38 goals, 27 goals and 11 assists. He's been the absolute focal point. But it's a very poor Liga this season. A lot of teams that you usually are competitive. Exactly. Marseille are sitting in like 12th place and Lyon are in 4th or 5th. But what you'd say with that PSG team is they lacked before this season a player to change the pace of it, and now they've got Di Maria in, that they do have that. But that's good. They play like a 4-3-3. That's good on one side of Zlatan. Zlatan's going to play through the middle. But I worry that they've got this other side where the Cavani comes in, who's obviously a forward, or it's Lucas. I'm not too keen on that option of either of them. I'd rather see Cavani through the middle. But I feel they don't have a different... On the other wing to Di Maria, they don't have a difference maker. And with the sort of slowness of their midfield with Thiago Motta, Verratti, very slow on the ball, they're very Italian. So I feel they need more difference makers before they can really, really go.
A few comments before we move on to a little Europa League chat.
Oh, good.
We've got one here from Faruha. Why did Allegri park the bus when his team were comfortable with the flow of the game?
It's a great question.
They had good players to not park the bus. That's what Faruha reckons.
Dave?
He parked the bus in the right way, didn't he? I think the thing that he lost was his substitutions that he made and how the press stopped. They were when we jumped in at half time, we watched the first half of the Barca game. When we jumped in at half time, they were still going. They still were energetic. They weren't letting Bayern have it in the final third. Mm. As the game wore on, they got tired. You know, when they come to the 80 minutes where they're still leading 2-0. But I feel that the substitutions were a bit wrong, and the shape didn't change enough for me. The shape didn't adapt again. Potentially, what he could have done, 80 minutes, could have gone to a 3-5-2, put another striker up to give Bayern Munich another thing to think about on the counter attack. So they can't throw another player forward and you get it on the... But the issue there, who they have on the bench with Dybala injured.
They have...
Striker-wise, that's the issue.
No one really to bring
that's on. The problem.
Yeah. There's another comment here saying, from Nico, saying, would Juve have won if Dybala played?
Yes.
That's interesting.
I think
really,
so.
Really,
Dave? Wow.
Yeah.
I think maybe... No. I mean, my point would be the win was really taken out of their sails. Yeah. So they would have had the option to counter-attack, but I also feel like Bayern Munich really turned it tonight.
Yeah. But I feel with that, I think that... The good thing that happened with Dybala suspended was they went to this system that Tuchel played, whether they meant to play, whether Allegri had set up. I think he kind of did set it up like that, to be quite honest.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he did go for it. He did play this system. I think he went for the 5-4-1. He made to play that system. But what he could have done there is he could have brought on Dybala on for Morata and given him even more a go on the counter-attack. And Dybala and Pogba, their link-up sometimes.
Or Dybala to do work alongside Morata and leave Morata on as a holder.
So that's what I mean. So, when 80 minutes then go, then make the change. Yeah, yeah. But obviously you've got to keep your legs in midfield with Storaro coming on and for Cuadrado. So it's very difficult, but it's like he played his chips a bit too soon.
I think, and you also would hope that players can last a little bit longer. I feel like...
Yeah. He brought off a little bit too early.
Yeah, and Juventus lost their legs very quickly in extra time, you know.
Yeah.
They'd outworked Bayern essentially because Bayern, when Juve sat back with the two goals, Bayern didn't have to work for the ball.
Mm.
They just had to move it quick. Yeah. And that's not as draining as working to win it back.
Well, that is an interesting comment here from Solomon, at Herr Solomon, the
great
main
guy.
Man. Thank you for your question.
Yeah, great guy.
He said FCB Juve was frilling, but it did shed light on Bayern's flaws. Pep needs to find a way to make the defence work without Boateng.
And this is, I think that's the it. Like it's gone too far. It just has gone too far. It's gone too far with his philosophy. I really do think he has. I'm sure later on when we talk about our tactics with the guest, we'll go into this in a bit more detail, but I feel he's just gone too far.
Wow. Another quick question from the main man, Varun Joshi. Players desire a transfer to Barca or Real Madrid, etc., because of their history. Is there any other team that can achieve that status?
I feel that it's a bit fake, in a way. You'd say that...
Hollow,
very hollow. There's a lot of clubs in European football that have great history. Liverpool, Manchester United, AC Milan are the big one in Italy, Juventus. I feel that it's just because... I don't know why it's become like this. It's weird. When Ronaldo was growing up, Real Madrid weren't anything special.
Oh, but Dave,
that's probably a load of rubbish. That was probably 2001 where they were quite good. So I suppose,
but they were at the same time they weren't the most special team in the world.
I'd say that it feels hollow the Real Madrid side of it. Going to Real Madrid doesn't guarantee you any sort of success, despite the amount of money they play, because it's quite a dysfunctional club.
I'd argue it's who's better at PR. I think Barcelona are very aggressive of their PR. Doesn't mean, I mean, they've done it, they've done a lot of things right. But at the same time, they've also benefited from essentially the PR of Cruyff and people sort of really eulogising about him as a man and a player.
But Cruyffians, as they know.
Cruyffians.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, look at these two teams now, and you're like, how many European Cups have Barcelona won in the last 10 years?
I think the big thing with that is as a player of any age, of any talent, you've got to think about not just if I'm going to move to this big giant, and are you going to fit in?
Of course, yeah.
Is the style complementary to me? For example, as a target man, Barcelona are the best team in the world, but why would you want to go to Barca as a target man?
Well, I mean, also, Dave, the point would be, with a lot of those guys, they want to move to challenge themselves and see if they can fit in with that.
But there's definitely other ways they can. I think there's other ways that they could push on. For example, you know, you go to Juve as a target man.
Absolutely. I also think that in time we'll see that will come about. It's just that right now the trend is to go to those big sides.
Yeah,
you know, Dortmund bucked that trend to some extent. Liverpool, but a lot of teams have bucked that trend down the years.
Yeah, which is good. I think Dortmund's a good one, but it's weird how they did lose all their star players. I find that really confusing. If they'd all stayed, they would have won the Champions League.
Back on Barcelona and Real Madrid as well. Of course, there was interest in both Suarez and Neymar from Real Madrid. Now, we don't know how concrete it was.
And Messi.
Well, there you go.
Three bids made for Messi.
I think the fact that Neymar...
That's so scummy, isn't it?
The fact that Neymar and Suarez did end up going to Barcelona.
Yeah.
I think does speak volumes. But anyway, let's move on to a bit of a Europa League chat.
Yeah.
Obviously, tomorrow night, or tonight, I should say.
Yeah.
Judging by when this podcast is actually going to go up. You guys are off to Old Trafford.
Wednesday sometime in the world.
It probably will be, hopefully. You guys are off to Old Trafford to watch the game.
Sorry you're not coming as well, Adam. Like,
no, it's fine.
I'm saying this to you. I'd love to go together. We've never been to the football together, have we?
The football? No, we haven't. No. One day, but
we will.
Now.
Hopefully, we'll go when there's a triple threat match, when they make a pitch into three,
or
there's three goals.
Or hopefully, Dave will end up going to see England, or we'll end up going to see
England.
Or
could work.
We'll just end up sort of.
You see,
nice
I think we should. I think I'm not a massive fan of England.
Nor am I, Dave. But that's my whole reason. Trivialise
the thing, right? So what about the whole
Dynamo Dresden?
Give us a team in the Euros to go and watch them.
Ooh.
That's a good one, Dave.
Ooh, don't say England.
So I'm already going to Albania versus Switzerland. So
are you, Dave?
Hopefully not those two clubs.
That's a really great match, because I mean Switzerland is full of Albanians.
There's quite an interesting subplot to there.
Two brothers,
Xhaka, who you know, two brothers. Anyway, but no, I reckon the whole tweet us which team should we support.
I'm definitely taking Albania because my girlfriend.
Let's take Germany.
Adam's taking Ireland.
Yeah, I could take Ireland. The girlfriend's Irish.
I'd take Ireland.
The girlfriend is Irish.
O'Brien.
And Dave is taking.
O'Brien.
Dave's taking Belgium.
No.
O'Brien.
Swiss. My grandma's Swiss.
Yeah.
On tomorrow night, the front two are going to Old Trafford.
Yes.
Both going to see the game. Liverpool currently 2-0. Cheers, as I said that. So obviously Liverpool 2-0 up as it stands. Not looking great for Louis van Gaal, but he has come out today and he said we owe the fans a performance.
He's
day.
Played it perfectly.
Now
he's
played
a blinder of a piece of PR there.
Has he not set himself up for a massive fall?
Why? Well, no, because now none of it is on him. If they don't put in a good performance, if they don't put in a good performance, then they go. It's the players. If they do put in a good performance, what man motivation?
So what's happened the last three games, right? There's been nothing. No bite, no swagger, no nothing.
You're not excited for the game, confident.
Watford, West Ham and Liverpool have been some of the most... And Mitchelland at home and Mitchelland away. Just no fight, no passion. It's just disgusting football. Like nothing. You've got to give something there, right? Whether you like get a red card and you get sent off and you're all dead aggressive, whatever, don't care. I'd rather see that than nothing.
Matter.
Don't care.
So I hope tomorrow, whether we win or lose, we just show passion and fight and we want to win this game. I think that's the thing.
I'm afraid you'd expect Liverpool to win this one. They've found some form.
United need to score four goals for me. United need to score four goals.
Liverpool
are definitely going to score one goal because United's defence is like a piece of... paper in a way. There's no brick wall there.
Okay. I thought you meant A4.
In terms of four goals under Louis van Gaal, that's happened four times in his 2.5 years.
Liverpool,
so it's not looking likely.
Liverpool finally found some consistency now.
So that was a good paper joke. Sorry, can we just in order, that was a great paper joke.
It was fine. A four.
Liverpool.
Yeah,
that's a great paper joke.
Found some consistency.
Yeah.
Looking decent.
My parents owned a paper shop. Till it blew away.
Oh my god. He's still on paper.
Bloody paper telling you.
2-0, obviously. Looking good.
Yeah.
Happy. Ready for the occasion.
But there's obviously.
Expecting the big
there's
win.
Who, Adam, there's who's you in this. There's who doing this tie.
What is there?
Because down the years there have been some big results. And Liverpool fans are nervous at this point because go away to Old Trafford. Sure, I'm in a platinum lounge, sure. But the problem with that is...
He's not bragging.
I'm not bragging. All I'm saying is we're taking the hole with us. We're going to sneak them in and we're going to do a little bit of Periscope.
There was a question. Someone just said, when is there going to be a front-free Snapchat? I don't think there's any better time to start one. Is there any better time
to launch a Snapchat than...
Andreas Pereira, not the...
Oh, the...
Said, not football related, but when will there be a front-free Snapchat? I think maybe tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night might be the night to start our Snapchat.
Yeah,
think?
I think it's snap o'clock, mate.
Dave, if you and I are snapping from different ends of the ground...
Oh,
there could be some real snapper.
Log out. It's a little
yeah.
bit,
do you?
Yeah, it's a bit annoying.
So if I'm logged in and he is logged in?
Yeah.
Why?
You'll log him out.
Really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Snapchat's not quite out.
Snapchat's not,
if you're listening. Snapchat's not quite up on the social media side of things, is it?
But anyway.
All I'm saying is I think, yeah, Liverpool got a great chance. You know, they're talking positively, whereas United are speaking from a negative side, just playing up.
We're the underdogs.
Yeah.
Which
incredibly.
Rise of a champion, that's all I'm saying.
The mark of how far they've fallen. The other game, obviously, is Tottenham.
Yeah.
Borussia Dortmund, the big boys.
3-0 down.
You're the underdogs. Are you?
Very much the underdogs. Yes, I think we are dead and buried. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what team Mauricio Pochettino come under some criticism for the last game. Obviously, starting Tom Carroll and Ryan Mason in that sort of midfield pivot didn't exactly work out. We were lacking a bit of steel, I'd say, in midfield. Lacking a little bit of steel. But he's sort of talking now about revenge and, you know, it's similar to LVG, talking about the need to put in a performance. I'm tempted to say he's going to rotate again because I think, you know, obviously all the focus is on the league. So, you know.
It's one of those things where the league's, for Tottenham fans,
of course,
you know, don't get me wrong, the Europa League is a great competition and it should be won, but there's a real chance for you to win the league.
All
so
about
go.
That league.
That Prem team.
Let's move on then to the talking point, Dave. So we had a lovely little chat.
A good one. I'm sorry to have missed this.
A lovely little chat with Athanasios Terzis, who has written a number of works, tactical analysis of a number of the top clubs and the top coaches in the modern game.
Yeah, well, his books are absolutely fantastic. The one that I've picked up, I'm going to buy a lot more of his books because they're brilliant, was the Barcelona under Pep Guardiola, and it was just fascinating. It was so interesting to look, to sort of see someone's analysis of watching each of the games, how they play against different systems. The collective movement, it was a big thing of, like, tactically I thought I knew quite a bit before reading this book, but after reading this book I was like, wow, this is big in terms of a team moving together and a team moving in cohesion, and it opened that sort of, you know, you've got to read as a person because it opens your mind up to to philosophies and so forth, but it was so interesting to see the collective movement. That was the big thing that I got from his books, and they, you know, definitely I'd go buy them if I were you.
I think the interesting thing about this chat is we're talking about Pep Guardiola's approach at Barcelona. We're talking about Antonio Conte's at Juventus, Jose Mourinho's at Real Madrid, and of course Jurgen Klopp's at Borussia Dortmund. All four of these managers look like they're going to be in the Premier League next season. It's a real clash of styles, a real different philosophies, which makes it so interesting. So enjoy this sort of tactically in-depth chat with Athanasios Terzis. So joining us for this week's talking point is Athanasios Terzis, the author of a number of books about tactical analysis and specifically some of the greatest coaches and greatest teams in modern football history.
That's right.
So Athanasios, you're sort of known for your analysis. You've sort of been breaking down their style of play, both in attacking and defensive senses, and sort of designing sessions to coach their style. So you've written a number of books on different teams, different coaches, including Barcelona, the 4-4-3 under Guardiola, Borussia Dortmund, the 4-2-3-1 under Jurgen Klopp, and Juventus is the 3-5-2 under Antonio Conte. Let's start talking a little bit about the Barcelona 4-3-3. So obviously one of the greatest
club sides of all time. Obviously, this system brought a lot of success to Barcelona. What are sort of the key elements of that system?
First of all, I started writing about Barcelona just before they win the Champions League with Guardiola. I tried to watch all the matches and get notes out of every situation. Luckily, Barcelona managed to beat Manchester United in this final in Rome, I think. And this book had a great success. Getting back now, I believe that tiki-taka under Guardiola, the way that was performed by this Barcelona was the best tiki-taka play I've ever seen at this time. They were very fluent. There was very fluidity in this team. They pressed very high up the pitch, and the most brilliant thing was the negative transition phase. I believe that both keeping possession and both getting into very fast in this negative transition made them so successful as a team.
What I find really interesting about that book especially was Lionel Messi's influence on the press. I think you sort of go into detail how Lionel Messi applies the first part of pressure, but it's shifting the opposition into a place where they don't want to be, where, for example, Barcelona had superior numbers and then they could properly put their press on. Do you feel that Lionel Messi, in a way, is underrated in terms of his defensive work?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we may think that Messi does not contribute so much in the defensive phase, but he does what he does in a very special and very effective way. By forcing the play towards one side, he creates a strong side for Barcelona. So it is easier for the players to move to that side and create this numerical superiority and win the ball back immediately.
Another interesting part of obviously that Barcelona team was Sergio Busquets. You mentioned in the book how he's so good at covering space, and for example, if Barcelona are pressing down the right hand side and Alves has been he's been beaten, dribbled past, and how Busquets sort of fits in and slots into that mold, it's so fluid. Do you think that Busquets is one of the best defensive midfielders ever?
I believe so too. I believe so, yes. And he has a great part of this Barcelona success because he's the most tactical aware player I've ever seen. Unbelievable how he reads the game and how he reacts fast to every tactical situation. He's a coach inside the team, and he can realize where the gap is, and he can feel it immediately. There is no way for the other team to find a way to break down Barcelona if Sergio Busquets is in.
Yeah, obviously, the book you wrote is about Guardiola's Barcelona, about that 4-3-3. Obviously, mm-hmm. now we're seeing Luis Enrique at Barcelona mm-hmm. and obviously enjoying great success. Do you see any difference between the two systems? How has Enrique taken it to the next level in some ways, or how has he adapted it?
I had several analyses of them of Barcelona matches last year here for a Greek website and for my website too. And I've seen that there are several differences between these teams. First of all, Enrique maybe brought a more passive way of defending than Guardiola. They could drop deeper and wait for the opponent to come. But the great success is that he has three excellent players up front. Neymar, Messi, and Suarez are the best right now. And they could win several matches without Barcelona playing well, really well. I believe that Guardiola's team were better in a teamwork apart, but individually, these three players can make a lot of difference in the match.
And similarly, we're talking about Guardiola, the system he had at Barcelona. Obviously, now he's at Bayern Munich, will soon be moving to Manchester City. Have you watched much of Bayern Munich, and have you seen how maybe Guardiola's style and tactics have evolved since he left Barcelona?
I believe he's evolved. He's better as a coach. He's tactically fluent. He uses a lot of formations. I've seen matches playing with 3-5-2. I've seen matches playing with with the diamond four in midfield. I've seen him playing this season with a 4-3-3. I really like his way. He can read the matches. And he can make all the tactical arrangements he needs to win a match. Of course, they were last year they were against Barcelona, and Barcelona really had in very good condition these three players. I believe that Messi is capable of breaking down every tactics he can find. He can find in his way. He can find in his way. Yes, he's outstanding. But I would like, but the way Barcelona, the way Guardiola plays with Bayern, with all the systems he applied the years he's in Bayern, and I will definitely do this.
Dave, what do you make of what Guardiola might bring to Manchester City? Do you think he's going to adapt or evolve anything when he comes to the Etihad?
I think we'll see, you know, I think we'll see the team evolve even further than what he's got. You know, look at the Barcelona team that Guardiola was manager of. You know, there was a number of formations they played, you know, 3-4-3 and then a 4-3-3. And as was mentioned before, out by Munich, they've gone even crazier. They play in all sorts of systems. At one point, I'm pretty sure this season, they were playing a 2-3-5 with five attackers against Hertha Berlin. It was absolutely crazy. So I feel that that's what's going to happen at Manchester City. They're going to be so fluid. Now give Pep maybe 6 months. City will be able to transition between all these formations so seamlessly.
I have to tell you that Adams, excuse me for one moment. Yeah. I have to tell you that Guardiola can adapt to his players, and that's the way that the great coaches should do. They should see what players are available, and they should create a way of playing which matches the player's characteristics. I don't see that these great coaches are stuck in one formation. They all see what the ingredients, and they will fix the appropriate recipe to these ingredients. So they will create a delicious meal.
That's a great way to put it.
I like it. Yes. Speaking of which, let's talk a little bit about Jurgen Klopp then, obviously a manager who is in the Premier League with Liverpool now, but had a lot of success at Borussia Dortmund with his 4-2-3-1 system, which many saw as quite groundbreaking. Talk to us a little bit about why that system really worked for him at Borussia Dortmund.
He had the appropriate players to play this way. I see that in Liverpool uses more the 4-3-3, 4-4-1-1, I believe. But the most marvelous thing was that he had the attacking midfielders who could create all of his attacking midfielders. The three midfielders were very capable of making driving runs towards the inside. He had very attacking-minded fullbacks, Smeltzer and Piszczek, and of course Lewandowski. Lewandowski is for me the best striker at this time. A player who can play for his team, not for his own, for his own. Of course, they were brilliant in negative transition, the counter attack and the counter pressing as well. I've seen that in Liverpool has a lot of ups and downs. Maybe he doesn't have the appropriate players to play the way he wants right this time.
That is interesting, isn't it, Dave? Because we saw Klopp did somewhat struggle when a few of those key players left Dortmund. He struggled to have the same success. And, you know, as Athanasios is saying here, at Liverpool, he doesn't yet have those ingredients to make that delicious meal, just yet, potentially.
Yes. But I believe that he will have the appropriate signings next year, and we will see a completely different Liverpool compared to this one we're seeing this season.
That is what a lot of Liverpool fans will be hoping, isn't it, Dave?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's... Yeah, the formation, for example, the 4-3-3 that he's playing at the moment, I think, again, yeah, it's because he doesn't have the correct players to have in that system. You know, Athios mentioned the band of three behind Lewandowski. They were so good at creating. You know, Mario Götze in the hole was so good. If Liverpool can pick up someone like that, bring him over to Anfield and then get him playing behind a striker, for me, that would be the start of something brilliant at Dortmund.
It has been rumoured. It has been rumoured. I'm sure Liverpool fans would love to see that. Let's move on a little bit then to talk about Antonio Conte. Again, a manager who next season we're going to be seeing in the Premier League.
First of all, 3-5-2 is a very popular system in Italy. Many teams use the back three formations. 3-4-3, 3-4-1-2, all this stuff. But I believe that Juventus were very, very effective in defensive phase. They could retain always a spare man at the back, having numerical advantage, and they were very strong and very solid at the back. Of course, they had very good forwards and relied a lot on Pogba or relied a lot on Pirlo. Pirlo is an excellent playmaker and they missed him a lot. I believe that he could play for 1 or 2 years in Juventus and have great success with them. Unfortunately, they lost him, but they managed to use the same way. Allegri used the 3-5-2 last season as a plan B in many cases, together with the diamond midfield, the four midfield midfielders, and they managed to use it effectively in many cases. Don't know if Conte will use these tactics in Chelsea. I don't know if the English players will have this tactical awareness to use this system. I saw that Van Gaal tried to do it in many times with United, but he changed it. We'll see.
That's the thing, Dave. It's the 3-5-2 is kind of a formation that really works if you've got the particular players that fit into those molds. I mean, we're hearing there about how having a back three, you've got those numbers at the back, but your players need to be very disciplined in order to actually pull it off.
They do, definitely. You know, the reason why the 3-5-2 came into prevalence was to counter-attack playing two up front, playing a 4-4-2. Especially over in Italy, the trend before the 3-5-2 came in as a trendy formation, it was the 4-4-2 diamond. So to completely counteract that, you play a 3-5-2, which means that your wing-backs basically are playing up against their fullbacks in the narrow diamond. So it gives you that sort of out wide. It gives you the cover of having three at the back as well as having these wing backs that can push up very high. And I feel that's where Juve, they were the first team to switch to the 3-5-2 in that league, I do believe. And then other teams have started to clock on and started to play that system. But it was revolutionary. And it's great to hear that, you know, Louis van Gaal couldn't play the 3-5-2 in England, potentially, because the players didn't understand tactically what they had to do in certain situations.
Mm.
But I believe that having three players at the back is a great advantage during building up. Most of the teams use two forwards or use one forward and now one attacking midfielders. There is always a numerical advantage at the back, so the team can take advantage of it and move the ball forward more easily. Juve do it that excellently, and they managed to bring the ball to Pirlo, and Pirlo did the rest afterwards. But I love systems with three players at the back. Guardiola used it against Juve also last the first legs match in Turin, and they have this advantage during building up, but they have also the safety of an extra player when they lose possession. They have always a three against two situation at the back, so this enables them to defend more aggressively when they lose the ball compared to if they had two against two at the back. This is a great advantage for 3-5-2.
Sorry, just a quick question. In terms of Bayern Munich, they play quite narrow. Their fullbacks play quite narrow, and then they have the wingers out wide to play, you know, 1v1 against their wingers. Do you think that's a positive move, or do you feel that, you know, having a fullback that goes on the outside of his winger, you know, creating a 2v2 on the wing is a better situation tactically than having a 1v1?
Good question. I saw that it is an innovative movement from Guardiola. I saw that it helped them. It helped Bayern a lot during negative transition. The fullbacks were towards the center, so when they lose possession, they were able in a few meters to press high up against the opposition midfielders. As regards, if they couldn't win the ball immediately, they could drop back in a few, running only a few yards, and to form a four-man formation at the back. If the ball was lost in one side, then the weak side's fullback could drop in about 10 meters, 10 yards, he could create a four-man defense with his teammates, the rest three at the back. So this was a great advantage for Bayern to use it and have a lot of possession against Juve. I believe also that Guardiola loves to have his wingers in wide areas. So the width is created by the wingers all the time. This helps them to stretch the defense and create gaps between the four defenders of Juve, as I saw in the first leg. So this innovative movement gave them the boost only to circulate the ball, to have many options in passing towards the center, as the fullbacks were in the center, and also be very effective in negative transition. I believe it worked very well for them.
And obviously we're talking about Conte's 3-5-2, Dave. Obviously, as I mentioned, he's coming to Chelsea now by the looks of things. Not necessarily a formation you expect him to implement at Stamford Bridge, because maybe he doesn't have the players there. You know, we're talking about the three central defenders at the moment, that they might not have those pieces there.
I think it's, you know, it's the first point that was mentioned before was, you know, a coach has to use his best assets in a way. You look at Chelsea, you'd say it's, you know, Willian and Hazard, if Hazard's fit, and Diego Costa. So, you know, there's two wide players and a striker. So it doesn't kind of fall with a 3-5-2 in a way. And obviously the centre halves as well. You've got John Terry, Ivanovic, Cahill, who have been playing in a back four their whole career. So would it be, you know, for them to suddenly play in a back three would be quite a difficult change. I think it could be difficult for them to sort of, you know, learn this new system, or potentially if they do get rid of all those players and bring in some new centre backs, maybe it's the right way to go.
Maybe, yes. Maybe bringing some new players can do fit the system in these players, in these new players.
Let's finally talk then about Jose Mourinho briefly. Obviously, long rumoured to be taken over from Louis van Gaal at Manchester United. Athanasius, your book was about, you know, the 4-2-3-1 formation that he sort of was using at Real Madrid.
Mm-hmm.
What are the sort of advantages of how Mourinho uses that formation?
One great advantage was the position of Ronaldo. Ronaldo took a very forward position. He played as a second striker in many games. Luckily for Mourinho, had Alonso behind him, so he could close every gap created on this side. I could see Alonso moving, shifting towards the sideline to cover for him, for to mark the positions fullback, because Ronaldo didn't want to follow him. But this disadvantage in the defensive phase was turned to an advantage when they won the ball. So I remember this Real Madrid being one of the most successful counter-attacking sides I've ever seen, due to the fact that they had very quick players, Benzema, Ronaldo, Higuain also played for them at this season, and they had an excellent player behind them, Mesut Ozil, who can make the final pass at the right time. Furthermore, Mourinho could read what should have done with this team. So he made them a very good negative. They performed very, very excellently in a negative transition phase. They were close to Barcelona at this part of the game. I remember them very, very attacking-minded when they lost the ball. They applied pressing high up the pitch and they won the ball back immediately. Of course, Mourinho has a more direct way of playing. He doesn't like tiki-taka. He wants his players to create more attempts on goal. He doesn't like to pass the ball around many times. So Real Madrid at this season had a lot of final attempts on the opposition's goal due to this way of playing. David. And of course, Alonso was a key player once again, like Busquets was in Barcelona. Alonso was in Real Madrid a key player.
We saw how it affected them when he left. Dave, we're talking about how Guardiola is quite flexible and he might bring in a new system at Manchester City. Klopp maybe doesn't have the right ingredients, as we said, for his preferred formation. Conte is probably going to, you know, use a different formation from the one that brought him such success at Juventus. But if Mourinho does come to Manchester United, you could sort of see how 4-2-3-1 could work. It's not only a very popular formation, and it's one that a lot of managers and coaches use, but United could have the pieces in place there for it to work.
Yeah, I'd say that they lack a core. They lack probably another centre-back. I think one or two defensive midfielders. A number 10, if Mourinho does go for the 4-2-3-1, a number 10 is going to be crucial. Someone that can press. You know, Antoine Griezmann would be absolutely perfect for Mourinho at Manchester United. But I feel Mourinho should go back to his days when he joined the Premier League, when they played a very defensive 4-1-4-1 system with great counter-attacking down the flanks in Ian Robin and Damien Duff. I feel they've got the raw ingredients to play that way. And again, you know, being a good coach, you should take the ingredients. You know, Memphis and Martial, get them on the flanks, get them running at teams on the break, and also get a target man on there so they can transition very quickly. That's how I feel United, you know, to win this league, win the Premier League, that's how I feel Mourinho should set up. But I do think that he'll probably go back to the 4-2-3-1 because he has played that for a number of years with a lot of success. So it's going to be really interesting to see.
I have to say in this part that Mourinho is also a very flexible coach. I remember him in his days in Porto. He used the diamond midfield and he won the Champions League. He came to Chelsea and he used the 4-3-3 and the for 2 in diamond also when he signed, I believe, Shevchenko. He went to Chelsea again. He went to Real Madrid and then back to Chelsea using the 4-2-3-1. He will find a way to create a successful team. I believe a lot on I rely a lot on him. I believe he can do the best with the players he have.
Let's see if he creates a successful team at Manchester United then. For now, though, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, Athanasios. Really interesting tactical analysis there. Thank you very much for coming on the Front Three.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. I had a great time.
Very good. If you want to see more of Athanasios.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
That's his work. We'll leave some links in the description so you can check them out. And we'll see you soon.
Okay, bye.